Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio, a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota National Guard, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA Healthcare System, and Beyond the Yellow Ribbon. Get updates and show information at minnesotamilitaryradio.com. Your host is former Command Senior Enlisted Leader for the Minnesota National Guard, retired Command Sergeant Major Doug Wortham.
Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Doug Wortham, and today we're going to check in with a couple of Minnesota Army National Guard soldiers who recently returned from a deployment with the 34th Infantry Red Bull Division, and we'll speak with a couple of soldiers who support the University of Minnesota's ROTC program. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Sean Mankey.
Chaplains play an important role in our armed forces. Whether our service members are Christian, Muslim, Jewish, Buddhist, or one of the hundreds of other faith traditions, our chaplain corps is ready to meet their spiritual needs. Embedded in units across the force, our chaplains advise our commanders and ensure the free exercise rights for all service members are upheld, including those who hold no faith tradition. Chaplain teams spiritually enlighten and rejuvenate us during good times and console and heal us during the bad. They have answered a higher calling to their faith and their fellow service members.
Thank you, General Mankey. For more information, please go to minnesotamilitaryradio.com. Operation Spartan Shield is a U.S. Central Command operation to strengthen defense relationships, build partner capacity, maintain readiness, and, if necessary, execute contingency plans. The Minnesota Army National Guard's 34th Infantry Red Bull Division recently returned from the Middle East, where they supported Operation Spartan Shield. Joining me in the studio to talk about that deployment is Lieutenant Colonel Jay Hackett and Staff Sergeant Major Chris Reed. Lieutenant Colonel Hackett is the commander of the 34th Infantry Division Headquarters and Headquarters Battalion, and Staff Sergeant Major Reed was the 34th Infantry Division's G3 Operations Sergeant Major on the deployment. Colonel Hackett and Sergeant Major Reed, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you, Doug, and thanks for having us. It means a lot to us that you're able to bring us in and talk a little bit about our deployment.
Yeah, absolutely. And Sergeant Major, welcome.
Well, it's exciting to be here. I have no choice but to call you Sergeant Major. too many years spent working for you, but it's exciting to be here.
Yeah, well, we're glad to have you in. And, you know, I'm happy to see you guys in person, obviously back from the deployment. A little disappointed because, as you know, we had a trip planned with Minnesota Military Radio to come over and spend some time with you in theater and record a couple of shows. And then, you know, through a series of real world events, we had to cancel that trip. We still were able to interview several soldiers from the 34th Infantry Division and just really check in on how the soldiers were doing. And it was great to be able to do that, but obviously it would have been nice to see y'all in person. Before we get into talking about your experiences on the deployment, you're senior people inside the Minnesota Army National Guard. You've been around for a little while. So Colonel Hackett, I'll start with you. What drove you to join the Minnesota Guard?
I enlisted in the Guard as a high school junior, and it was one of those things that I knew that I was interested in early on. I had some grandparents that were in World War II, and then that inspired me, the stories and the service, being part of, you know, that effort and serving was something that interested me. So I trusted my gut on that and enlisted. And then at some point in time, somebody thought enough of me to recommend that I commission as an officer. And so I did, have spent time in almost every organization in the state of Minnesota since as a traditional soldier. Meaning I drill on the weekends and do my obligatory 2 weeks a year and the other training as necessary and the education that comes with it. But I am a traditional soldier.
And as a traditional soldier, obviously, you know, you mentioned the commitment there. But you've got a full-time job. So what do you do in the civilian world then?
Yes, I manage property and casualty claim unit for Western National Insurance just down the road in Edina, Minnesota.
Okay. All right. So as a traditional person, you're coming into the weekend drill. Obviously, you've stuck around. You've made lieutenant colonel, which is a great accomplishment. You get the opportunity to be a battalion commander, and then you find out you're going on a deployment. Now, how many deployments do you have?
Three.
Okay, so third deployment. But as a battalion commander, were you in other leadership positions the previous deployments?
Yes, in a way. I had previously deployed to the Sinai, and I was a battalion XO for the 2nd Battalion 135th Infantry in Mankato, and a change of mission at the last minute put me in command of a multinational battalion in the northern part of Sinai as a 2IC, but a de facto commander for the U.S.
Well, we'll get an opportunity to hear about some of the successes that you and your battalion had while on this most recent deployment. I want to come to Sergeant Major Reed. You know, we're talking downstairs. You know, you've got 20-plus years. what led you to joining the military, and what got you to where you are today?
Well, I think the interesting part is I was an anomaly at the time. I think it's more common practice now, but I was an active duty soldier for 6 years, straight out of high school, active duty. And then I left and I started going to school for radiology. And some Minnesota Guard recruiter saw that I was using benefits and offered me up an opportunity to come into the Guard. So I've been in the Minnesota Guard now 20 years, a little over 20 years. But it was an opportunity. I also come from a long lineage of serving members and married into another family. I think at one point there are four of us, AGRs, full-time active Guard reservists in the Minnesota Guard. But they're all retiring. They're leaving me here to fend for myself.
Yeah. And you know, you didn't mention specifically, but your wife, Katie, she retired from the Minnesota National Guard after a nice long career as an AGR, Active Guard Reserve soldier. So she's at home, but still working. And here you are, you're still serving. And who knows what the future looks like. But we appreciate, actually both of you, we appreciate your service to our nation and the things that you've done. And I want to make sure we get to talk about this deployment, right? It's always good to talk about the successes and things like that. And Colonel Hackett, I mean, you were at the battalion level. Sergeant Major Reed was at the division level. So same question to both of you, because it's going to be different. But what was your primary mission at the battalion level as a commander?
You know, headquarters and headquarters battalion is a unique unit in the National Guard. And there's only so many division headquarters. But it's essentially a support element for the division commander and his staff. So we exist to provide the logistical administrative support, get the division headquarters and its command posts into theater, sustain them, provide all of the legal, administrative, and logistical training and support that's needed. So the goals were to get us all there, get us trained up, really, to provide that combat power to the division headquarters the year, 2 years, 3 years in advance, to get people trained up, get them prepared for the deployment, and for any deployment until we receive a notice of sourcing. So the goal was to get us ready, get us over there, get us all there within the required strength, and then allow the division headquarters to do what it does and support them through that, move people throughout the theater, take care of our soldiers. And that was really the primary responsibility. And then get us home, get everybody home. So it's taking care of that entire group to facilitate those staff efforts that the division staff needs in order to give the commanding general the ability to make decisions and carry out his mission as a task force Spartan commander.
And Sergeant Major, so, you know, obviously the battalion is there. You're a part of the battalion, but you work at the division level, which is a level above the battalion. You're following their training plan, right, because you got to get ready too. Yeah. But when you get in theater, or even leading up to going to theater, you're preparing for the division's mission. And as the G3 Sergeant Major, the operations, that's a pretty big responsibility. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's a heavy lift. I do want to say, first and foremost, the relationship Colonel Hackett and his staff, and I think I played the conduit between that battalion staff and the division staff to ensure we did meet those training guidelines leading up to this. Everybody has their own ideas of what they want to do organizationally within each section. Every section has a leader, and they all have their own plans. And in the operations world, my job is to sync that up. Now, when we went to Task Force Spartan, Spartan Shield, The responsibility for that was an entire area of responsibility that covered the entire region. So we had a total of 18 countries we were interacting with in partnership, working and building rapport and relationships, training opportunities amongst multinational partners. But ultimately, we were the actioning arm of the ARCENT command, so the Army Central Command. We were their actioning arm for all things, whether it was a quick response force, an immediate training requirement, even similarities to what we do in the Minnesota Guard. If there was a dramatic response to whether it be a weather event or a geopolitical event, we were responsible for responding to that quickly.
Yeah, that's a big responsibility. I want to make sure we get to talk about some of the successes, too. So we'll take a quick break here. We'll come back. We'll talk about really, you know, those successes and some other things going on with the 34th Infantry Red Bull Division. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. In the studio with me is Lieutenant Colonel Jay Hackett and Staff Sergeant Major Chris Reed, both recently returned from a deployment with the 34th Infantry, the Red Bull Division, supporting Operation Spartan Shield. Before we went into break, gentlemen, we were talking about, kind of the goals, right, that you had. And, you know, you got everybody overseas. Obviously, you were trained properly to go do the mission, successful mission. Everybody came home. That's a success. And what I'd like to know about is if there are some things, and I'll start with you, Sergeant Major, if there are some things on the deployment that really stand out as, you know what, that was super cool. That was success that we're proud of.
I wish it was easy to put my finger on one thing. But we had so many opportunities to send soldiers to great locations to train with multinational partners, see parts of the world never would have an opportunity to see. But due to the fact of us hitting the ground, you know, the Minnesota National Guard has a storied reputation for our successes and how we train and lead. And this was no different. You know, we went into this expecting a different perception when we landed in country. And we had to turn very rapidly. We had a lot of young soldiers, young officers have to take on responsibilities they originally weren't prepared for. But those success stories of watching these young soldiers grow into those roles and grow into those responsibilities, for me, was the greatest takeaway that I had, was watching their success.
And you've got a great vantage point for that, because in the operations world with the G3, you're directing and giving these taskings to reassign as needed based on the mission.
Yeah, every day, 15, 20, if not more, touch points with every section within the division staff, making sure that they're prepared to handle. But we had to pull out key people to go do other missions that popped up, that junior soldiers and junior officers had to step up to roles they were not expecting. So there was a lot of mentor coaching going on. But they all rose to the challenge. It was a phenomenal experience.
You know, another feather in the cap, so to speak, about the storied history and how well Red Bull soldiers do, how well the Minnesota National Guard does on the national and at the state platform. So, Colonel, what about you? Anything that really stands out to you?
Yeah, several things that I'd like to mention. Before we left, we were in Croatia very shortly before we needed to deploy. And so coming back from immediate response 23 was hectic. And we had a brand new staff and there was a lot of turnover. And so building that team and having that team learn and grow quickly, I'm really proud of how we came together. And Sergeant Major Reed, again, you know, was a key piece of that conduit to help us communicate, keep people moving, and keep that division staff linked in with the battalion staff. And I'm really proud of how we worked together and how we made things. We built that connective tissue early in Croatia, and it continued on through the deployment. There was some personal and professional growth that was just fantastic to see. I'm really proud of how soldiers took advantage of the time that they had to make themselves better, and how we as in leadership throughout each echelon really made their soldiers better for readiness down the road, coming home ready to take on their next challenge. Really proud of how soldiers took care of each other, their battle buddies. They really looked after each other, which is so crucial when you're so far from home, and how we began our reintegration efforts several months before we redeployed. And I'm really proud of the effort and the time that it took for us to get our arms around looking forward, you know, to the issues of, you know, reintegration, getting home and getting back into life. And it's a point of pride for me. I'm really the junior leaders in our organization that stepped up to show us what they can do, kind of the mission command, you know, ability to just show us what you can do. Here's a problem and tackle this. And I'm just really proud of them.
You know, you mentioned the pride you have with the personal growth you've been able to see through many of your soldiers. What's interesting is when I interviewed several soldiers who were on the deployment, you know, obviously we weren't there, but we were interviewing from across the pond, so to speak. And one of the recurring themes that just about everybody talked about was getting to the gym, doing physical training. In not everybody has the commander's long duty day, right? Not everybody has the G3 Sergeant Major's, you know, 12, 14, 16, 18-hour duty day, depending on what was going on. Many of the staff had 8 hours a day, maybe 10-hour days, and there's a lot of free time. And so I imagine that had to be nice for you to see people doing those types of things because you knew they weren't getting in trouble then.
Right. And we were fortunate in being in a location that afforded so many opportunities for that growth. But yes, I mean, it really comes down to leaders knowing their people. That's a priority. I mean, it's the TAG's priority. It's our priority to really know our people. And if they aren't going and taking advantage of those opportunities to push them and to see, you know, where we can stretch them and get them to grow.
So, Sergeant Major, I mean, we've talked to other entities that have deployed, other soldiers and airmen who have deployed, and we talk about, you know, obviously the mission, but I always like to talk about and hear more about the actual day. Right. So Sergeant Major G3, I was in that role temporarily when we went to Iraq. I know what the day looked like for me. What did a typical day look for a Sergeant Major Reed?
I'd like to joke that it was corporate combat. Going into it, you know, early starts, late finishes. But I have to be there before the rest arrive to make sure, you know, that we're setting the conditions. I usually, most nights are interrupted with something else from a message from leadership of the next day's impending joys. But my day literally was spent between email traffic, between hire, so what we call the up and out approach, and then the rest of my day was spent down and in. So I was going from section to section, and it wasn't so much for accountability or see who's where and who's, you know, in the office. It's more to make sure that we're all in sync, doing the things that the mission directs and that the commanding general wanted us to focus on. So a lot of time in our operations center, a lot of time in individual offices with mentoring, and then I was the one liaison for the division staff to the area CENTCOM. I was the CENTCOM liaison, so I had to meet up with all of the Area Support Group Kuwait, all the RSEN command teams, and I did that on a daily basis as well to make sure we're meeting their expectations as well as what the battalion.
And I would imagine part of those conversations as you're out and about is, do you have everything that you need to be successful? Is there anything the G3, the operations team, can give to you to make you be able to perform better?
Yeah, well, what got interesting real quick was the onset of aerial threat over there, and that required us to change our defensive posture. So we ended up having to move T-walls and C-channels, and that fell onto my section's responsibility to start redesigning even the installations' protective measures at all of the installations we worked at.
So we only have less than 2 minutes, and so Colonel Hack, I want to make sure I get to you. You are a traditional guardsman, and I'm just wondering if there is some professional stuff that you've been able to bring from your normal job into the Guard or vice versa that's really been beneficial to you?
Yes, I think the Army's done a really good job in the last decade or so to embrace that cross-pollination, even on the active duty side, to bring some of those leadership concepts in. But yes, I've been able to bring the leadership lessons, the leadership challenges that I've had into my civilian career, and vice versa. I know that I benefited from my civilian career in more tactical patience this time around in dealing with some of the issues at my level. I don't think I would have had that level of maturity or understanding about some of the people problems that I had I not had the civilian leadership background that I have.
That's awesome. We have 30 seconds. So, Sergeant Major, if someone's thinking about joining the National Guard, what would you tell them?
Absolutely. You 100%. Know, and 100%. And if nothing more, it's the opportunity to maybe test yourself to find something you didn't know was inside, right? Yeah. And we see that in a lot of our soldiers. And given the opportunities that exist right now and the plethora of MOSs or skills that they can learn, they'll carry right over into the civilian sector.
Well, I appreciate both of you coming on, Colonel Hackett. I know I'm going to see you in about a month or so out at Wild Wings for the redeployment hunt. So I look forward to seeing you there. And Sergeant Major Reed, great to see you. Please say hi to Katie for me. And I appreciate you spending time here with Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks, Doug.
Yeah, you bet. That's Lieutenant Colonel Jay Hackett and also Sergeant Major Chris Reed with the 34th Infantry Red Bull Division. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. In a moment, we're going to hear about the University of Minnesota's ROTC program. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, Brad Lindsay.
The Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs offers support and customer service 7 days a week to Minnesota veterans and their families through 1-888-LINK-VET. Dedicated staff at LINK-VET provide information and referrals via telephone, email, and online chat. It is Minnesota's one-stop shop that offers immediate answers with one-on-one assistance for all veteran-related questions and needs. Visit MinnesotaVeteran.org to chat with a LINK-VET representative or search our large question and answer database. Call 1-888-LINK-VET today.
Thank you, Commissioner Lindsay. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Captain Christopher Bartsch and Staff Sergeant Joseph Hantz are here to talk about the University of Minnesota's ROTC program and the Golden Gopher Battalion. Captain Bartsch is the Assistant Professor of Military Science and the National Guard Liaison to the ROTC program. And Staff Sergeant Hantz is a recruiting and retention non-commissioned officer specifically assigned to the ROTC program. And Captain Bartsch, Sergeant Hantz, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks for having us, Doug.
Yeah, perfect. You can say thanks, too. It's all right.
Okay. Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much for having us.
Hey, thanks for coming in. And, you know, we've had ROTC on quite a bit over the last 9-12 months. I think you're the third or fourth group talking about ROTC. And we've been hitting it pretty hard, sharing some information about ROTC. I think there's a ton of benefits that go along with it. You know, we need good commissioned officers in our military. And because you are the recruiter out there, Sergeant Hantz, you know, people are probably going to start with you, right? You're out there, you're doing the legwork, you're finding people to talk about the ROTC program. And so I thought that I'd start with you and maybe you can just tell us a little bit about what you do to find the people to come into the program
Then
what it looks like for someone who would want to join.
Yeah, so a lot of what we do to find people, it's both proactive and passive, right? So people come to us because it's a big school and it's a great program. So we have 11 partnership schools as well that go to the U of M. So they don't just have to go to the U of M. They can go to St. Thomas, St. Kate's, Augsburg, Hamlin, McAllister, Metro State even, right? All these schools come to our program. So we have a lot of students that inquire about it and then they come to us. Once we kind of identify that you're interested, I work through qualifying you. Okay, so it's a lot of information because there's three things we're looking for out of potential cadets, and it's called scholar, athlete, leader, SAL criteria. So it's, you know, are you a good student? Because kind of the bar in high school, right, is like get good grades, graduate. That's why you're there. Same in college. So I'm talking to high schoolers and current college students, even graduate students, about the potential of them becoming an Army officer. So we get them in. They come become, you know, are you qualified? Not just to do ROTC, right? But are you qualified to serve in the Army afterwards in some capacity, full-time, part-time, right? So we look at all of that. So a lot of the standard stuff that a recruiter would ask as well also applies to these people. It's not necessary right away, per se, to start ROTC. But there will become a point where you have to meet those standards.
Sure.
So that's kind of the big part of what we do in qualifying them once they find out about us or we meet with them. We go to high schools, particularly Minnesota Education Fairs, or if a high school particularly wants us to come, we go to colleges and their orientations. And then as well as just different events, officer-related recruiting events, career fairs, things like that as well. And then a lot of marketing and emails, texting, calling people. And then we also work with the Education Incentives Office for the Minnesota National Guard for people that are currently soldiers that are currently pulling STR and go, hey, are you interested in becoming an officer now?
And we STR also being the state tuition reimbursement program.
Correct, yes.
Okay. So as a member of the Minnesota Army National Guard, a recruiter for the Minnesota Army National Guard supporting the ROTC program, do you only put people in ROTC that are going to join the Army National Guard, or will you work with people who are also looking at potentially going into the active component, Army, or maybe even the reserve component?
Correct, yeah. So I am assigned there along with my office partner, Staff Sergeant Rachel Baufield. We both work there to put cadets into the Minnesota National Guard. But as an outward-facing kind of half of our job, we do talk about active duty, we talk about the reserves, and we talk about the Guard to anyone potentially, because the paths are open. What is it, college students change their major up to, what, five times?
Sure.
Your career choice in the military can change too. So we have to be open and knowledgeable to understanding what it is that they're trying to do and go through.
Sure, provide as much information as you can so they can make an educated decision. And and so let's talk real quick, because I want to make sure I get to Captain Bartsch too, but what are the benefits of someone joining the ROTC program and specifically then contracting to be with the Minnesota Army National Guard?
So as far as becoming an ROTC cadet, what do you get? So ROTC is the largest grantor of college scholarships in the country. No company, club, charity, school, program, or organization gives more money and more scholarships than Army ROTC, even today. That being said, it's all competition. But the potential for full tuition and fees to the university you're attending, even private school, is there from an ROTC scholarship. On top of that, cadets can, once they contract, expect to earn $420 a month to kind of offset having to work so they can focus on being a good student and a good scholar, you know, athlete, leader, those things that we're looking for, a good cadet. And then potentially $600 a semester for books as well. And then we have more money on the table depending on the path that they go down, you know, whether you go, you know, you're planning active or you want to go on the guard while you do this or the reserves or whatever. It just kind of depends on the path for you.
And then if it's a person who maybe already is in, because you know that they're getting the tuition reimbursement, maybe they're using their GI Bill too, all this stuff is going to add up, and very well, they're going to join ROTC, go through school, and they're not going to pay a dime.
So more often than not, they make money.
Yeah. All right. So I want to make sure I get Captain Bartsch in here to have his voice. Let's talk about the day in life. All right. So Hance gets them in. And then you're going to meet with that person, and you're, as an assistant professor, you're going to deal with this person on a very regular basis.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. So as Sergeant Hance hands them over to me, I basically turn around and start briefing with them right off the bat. So as the assistant professor of military science, I'm also the military science one instructor, which primarily means freshmen, anyone that's coming into the school. So I give them a fundamental breakdown and basis for Army values, structure of the military, and then the baseline for like team and squad tactics, infantry tactics. But most of my role ends up being where, yes, I'm instructing twice a week. in addition to that, they start working with their cadet chain of command. So once they start in the program, they do physical training three times a week, surrounded by or based off of the Army Combat Fitness Test. So I'm constantly practicing on that to pass. One of the biggest benefits of doing that twice a semester and then training in between is it helps facilitate some of the benefits, especially being in the Minnesota National Guard, the state tuition reimbursement. But as they move through, they have their class, and at least once a week we'll have what is called a leadership lab. So the seniors devise and plan this training, and it's then executed by the juniors in their third year, training the first and second year students slash cadets.
So what it sounds like to me is you're providing an opportunity for those senior levels, so let's just say the juniors, the seniors, to actually exercise that leadership training and development they've been receiving now for 3 or 4 years.
Well, especially because of the size of our program. So we're over about 200 cadets. And so for each class, they're roughly about around 40 to 50 cadets. And so they have enough to have a battalion staff. They're able to have leadership at every level. And everything is geared towards their junior year in ROTC and to complete and succeed at the cadet summer training that happens between their junior and senior year. So everything is geared towards that and their success.
And coming back to you, Sergeant Hans, you know, you're out there, you're working with people, you're talking about, you know, coming into the program, obviously. You know, it's not for everybody. So, you know, what do you say to those people, you know, that this is maybe too hard for me, but you know that they can do it?
You know, that is a constant conversation Captain Bartsch and I are having with, especially with freshmen, as they're learning how to just be adults for the first time on their own.
Yeah.
And managing their own time and schedules and that resiliency that comes into play. But the biggest thing we're telling them is like, hey, if it was easy, it wouldn't be worth doing.
Sure.
And you need to challenge yourself because that's what leaders do. And that's how you grow and become the best version of you that there is. The challenge we face is getting them to see that.
Yeah, right.
And see past the adversity of it and getting to that end point.
Yeah.
But I would say for the most of these students that come to us, this is the plan. Like,
right.
This is the life plan.
Okay. Hey, this is a great place. We'll take a break, then we'll talk about kind of the cadre's role in all of this as well. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Doug Wortham. I have Captain Bartsch and Staff Sergeant Hans in the studio with me. We're talking about the ROTC program. And before we went to break, you know, we were kind of getting the rundown. And I want to come to you, Captain Bartsch. As cadre, you know, you said you're an assistant professor of the military science. You're teaching a class a couple of times a week, but you have other involvement that you need to have with the cadets. So what is the role of the cadre, the larger staff, and what else are you doing with our cadets other than teaching them from the podium?
Well, so there are a multitude of cadre that work at the University of Minnesota. So each one teaches its MS level, so the military science level. Some are active duty. Most are combat arms. So from my background, field artillery, and then I also had time as an intelligence officer. So a lot of us, what we do is we kind of give them kind of a peek behind the descriptors of what these branches are. How does it really apply to military operations off their basic understanding that they've been taught so far? I always think of it is that with the cadet leadership, they're planning these events. We're the bumpers in bumper bowling. I want to make sure that it's safe, that they're supported. And so with my particular role with freshmen, I'm an instructor. I'm the liaison, pretty much a mentor. I'm their first interaction with an established officer. And so and there's a multitude that are at the university, so they have that engagement. But as they progress and they move past my class, they work their way up and start picking units, especially if they're in the Minnesota National Guard. When they're done with their first year, they actually start going to a unit as a cadet, and I help place them. You know, we work off of distance traveled or what they're interested in. And then I use some of my informal contacts from previous positions in the Minnesota National Guard to try to facilitate that. So there's that piece. And then when it gets closer to branching, I help work with the experience they've gained so far and try to place them into the branch that they're looking for and that they want, that they've been pursuing, also scrubbed against the needs of the Army.
And I liked your description about the bumpers, right? Sergeant Hance talked about this is the first time many are learning to adult.
Yes.
Right? Well, this is also the first time many are having an opportunity or being forced to be in an opportunity where they need to lead other people. And so I imagine that you have a very forgiving environment, knowing that you've got people that have never done this stuff before.
Oh, most definitely. So all the opportunities for training that we do multiple repetitions of what we call lanes. So it gives everyone an opportunity to have those leadership experiences that build off of each other. Even though that as they progress in the years in the program, the stress kind of ramps up a little bit.
Sure.
Especially when it gets to their third year because they're being assessed through all points and all exercises and operations that they're doing. And they're being assessed by the seniors who are already post camp. They're the ones that are about to commission as officers.
So real quick, Sergeant Hance, you not only recruit, do you support the cadets as well?
Yes. So my office partner and I, we are also considered cadre with the program. So we teach in class and assist Captain Barich in our areas of expertise when it makes sense. But then also, like, we go do PT with all the cadets at 6 o'clock in the morning, and we go to their large training exercises and facilitate what relations we have within the recruiting battalion as well to, like, you know, do we need to get stuff to help with recruiting and open house events and things like that. So it's a lot more than just, hey, come on in here and let's talk about joining the Guard. Yeah. It's encompassing.
Well, I would imagine that's something nice for those cadets to see, too, is not only did you help them make the decision, but now you're there supporting them along the way. And so we've got just a little bit of time. So if someone wanted more information about the ROTC program, where would you send them to, Sergeant Hance?
So the best way to learn more about Army ROTC, specifically with the U of M, is going to be going to our website, the University of Minnesota's website, and in the search bar there, just looking up Army ROTC. We have our own page. And then in the About section, they can even request a info session that comes to us directly. Fill out some info on there, and then I reach out to you, or one of our team does, actually.
Well, it doesn't hurt to check it out and find out what benefits might be available to you. Captain Barich and Sergeant Hance, thank you so much for coming in. I know it's a short amount of time, but we do appreciate it, and we're glad we can have you on and hear about ROTC.
Thank you so much for having us.
Joining me in the studio is our military producer, Second Lieutenant Austin Stibbe. Lieutenant, welcome to this side of the microphone.
Yeah, thanks, Doug. It's great to be on this side of the studio this time.
Now, we have a real short amount of time. Normally, you're in the engineer's booth with Zach and working with our guests, make sure that they're ready and comfortable to come in and do the show. But we had a couple of minutes here today, and I thought I'd introduce you to our listening audience. You are the new military producer for Minnesota Military Radio. So, what does that mean? What do you have to do for us?
Yeah, there are a lot of little things that go into it that culminate to a pretty good week to week. So I work with both the Army and Air Guard friends in there, as well as other branches to secure military guests, whether they're currently serving or veterans, to be on the show.
And you're a part of the Minnesota Army National Guard. You work in the Public Affairs Department.
I do, yes. So I've been in the Public Affairs Office for Joint Force Headquarters within the National Guard since November now.
All right. And so as a part of your responsibilities, you support Minnesota Military Radio. So you're a second lieutenant, so you're relatively young in your career. How did you get commissioned?
So I commissioned through Federal Officer Candidate School. So I know we just had ROTC personnel on. I decided to join after I finished college. Went to basic training in South Carolina, and then immediately after went to Officer Candidate School in Georgia.
And so how long have you been a member of the Minnesota National Guard?
I swore in the fall of 2020, so it's been a minute now.
Okay.
And then I commissioned about 3 years ago.
All right, perfect. And then how did you land in public affairs?
So, yeah, that's an interesting question because really it's been my career since undergrad internships. I've always been in the public affairs sphere, and my last job was middle management at a public affairs firm. With that, I was looking for additional purpose and was already a part-time serving National Guardsman. So I every weekday, every business day for about 6 months, I refreshed the jobs posting page for the full time until something in public affairs opened up. And as soon as I saw one, I applied. And a few conversations later, I got onboarded. So it's something I've been wanting to do for a long time. But public affairs as a whole has been my career since undergrad.
And what was your official military branch?
I am an ordnance officer within logistics.
Okay. All right. And now you get to do public affairs. So on your traditional role, are you doing public affairs work as well?
No, not right now. I'm actually a maintenance control officer in an infantry battalion. So I make sure that all the trucks are working.
Yeah. And where are you drill at?
I drill down in Austin, Minnesota. So a bit of a drive every once in a while, but I love it. It's a great unit with excellent leadership. And
but you get to do this full time and spend some time with us here on Minnesota Military Radio. So that's pretty cool.
Absolutely. I love it.
Yeah. Well, hey, we appreciate you being in here and just introducing yourself and look forward to having you support Minnesota Military Radio moving forward.
Yeah. Thanks, Doug.
That's Second Lieutenant Austin Stibbe, who's our military producer. Before we close out today's show, I'd like to say thanks for tuning in to Minnesota Military Radio. We appreciate your continued support. We strive to bring you quality content each week and look forward to hearing your feedback and suggestions for future topics and guests. Please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com, click on Contact Us, and send us your thoughts. Join us next week. We'll get an update from the Rosemount Beyond the Yellow Ribbon. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Doug Wortham, your host on Minnesota Military Radio. I hope you have a productive week and you find a way to thank and honor those who have and those who continue to serve and sacrifice so we can enjoy the liberty and the freedom this great country has to offer.